Hero Hype, episode 37. So excited to talk about everything that came out over the last week, because while there wasn't a lot of news, a little thing called the Super Bowl happened. So we got a couple of really neat little trailers for like this little film called Civil War that's coming out. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's kind of an indie production, but as always, guys, I'm Danya. I'm joined again by my co-host, Caitlin.
Hello, and I actually watched the Super Bowl for the football game that wasn't very good.
Well, I mean, I sometimes stay up for it as well, because I used to, when I was still living in Wales, I used to go to Super Bowl parties. I didn't understand much of what was going on, but there was usually food, and we got to stay up and laugh a lot, but didn't stay up this time, was no parties, and they released the Civil War trailer earlier, like before the game, so I had zero reason to stay up, except for maybe Beyonce, but I just watched that in the morning instead.
We'll see, the difference is I'm a football fan, so.
That would make the difference. That would definitely make the difference. I just don't understand the rules, so maybe I'll have to get you to teach me sometime, but
I say the same thing about your kind of football, so.
that football makes more sense to me, but we won't get into a sports debate. We're not here to talk about balls. I mean, oh, wait.
Well.
Right. Yeah, so if you guys want to get involved in the conversation with us, because apparently we're resorting to baseless childish humor today.
Well, we both have just watched Deadpool.
We both, yeah. Yeah, Deadpool has happened for both of us very recently. So if you do want to talk to us for any reason, you can get hold of us on our Twitter account, which is at Hero Hype Podcast, or you can email us, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com. Or, as always, you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hyperbole.com. But let's start off with a brief history for you guys. So this week, I'm going to give you a brief history of Killer Frost, which I realized as I was suggesting this is the character that I was going to do this week, that I did Captain Cold last week. So I'm kind of on a theme of cold-related characters here. Winter is coming. But yes, so, Killer Frost. So, Caitlin Snow was a gifted young scientist working at Star Labs, assigned to an outpost in the Arctic Circle. She was working on a self-sustaining thermodynamic ultraconductor engine, originally spearheaded by the now-deceased Dr. Louise Lincoln. The machine was designed to subvert the second law of thermodynamics, and thus create perpetual motion. She was warned away from the project by her colleagues, and, upon completing the engine, they revealed themselves as Hive and turned on her. To protect Hive's interests in the energy industry, they placed her inside the working STU engine. Panicking, Caitlin ripped out the wires for the coolant system, therefore infusing herself with ice. She turned into an almost vampiric creature called Killer Frost that craved heat and killed the Hive agents. She continued to crave a heat source and returned home, where she encountered Firestorm. During their battle, she discovered that Firestorm's powers could temporarily heal her condition and devoted her time to seeking him out and continually confronting him.
It's always so weird because that's my name.
Yeah.
And she even spells it the same way I do, which very few do. So.
Yeah. So why Killer Frost? Because we encountered her for the first time this week. Properly encountered her for the first time this week. We did get a kind of glimpse of her at the end of season one. But yeah. Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Danya has feelings.
I do. I have a lot of feelings. Most of them for the other cold-related character. But I did. I really enjoyed this week's Flash. But before we get to that, let's go over the kind of headlines that we got for TV this week. And again, we're a little bit light on information. Not a lot has come out. First thing that we got, Hayley Atwell has been cast as another Carter in an ABC pilot called Conviction. Now, this is going to be a sort of procedural drama kind of thing, which apparently are all the rage right now. Everyone wants a procedural drama. So, yeah, her character's going to be called Carter Morrison. It's going to be set in a fictional department called the Conviction Integrity Unity. Yeah. But she's going to be a former first daughter who will be put into a leadership position. And basically her thing is going to be to overturn wrongful convictions, which it sounds really interesting. And it's got some really cool people working on it. So Liz Friedman, who worked on Jessica Jones, is going to be on it. Well, not on it. She's going to be working on it. But it brings up some interesting questions about the future of Agent Carter. Now, in the press release, they have stated that they are open to continuing both series and having her on both and giving them smaller episode orders so that she can film and work on both. So it's not really the nail in the coffin for Agent Carter. However, Agent Carter's ratings haven't been particularly strong despite the critical reception.
Oh, they have particularly bad. They've been really bad, which yeah. is unfortunate.
Yeah, so it's never, Agent Carter's never gotten the best ratings anyway, but it is quite beloved amongst fans and critics, and you never know. They've renewed weirder things with lower ratings, see Gallivant. So I wouldn't necessarily worry too much about Agent Carter yet. And that said, if we did get a satisfying conclusion to season two, then yeah, I'd be disappointed, but it wouldn't be the end of the world because we'd have had a really nice rounded out story to fill in the gaps of what Peggy's been up to.
Yeah, I will be shocked if it gets renewed from the way rumors are swirling. I will be shocked.
Yeah, but
disappointed, I would be disappointed that it was not renewed and pleasantly surprised if it was, but I will be very surprised if it is renewed.
Yeah. So I guess that's kind of like news adjacent. They haven't really said that it's not renewed or it is renewed yet. So we'll keep an eye on it for you guys. And obviously if it does get picked up again for a new season, then we'll let you know. But the other bit of news that we got is that we've now been given a title and synopsis for the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. mid-season premiere. So Entertainment Weekly reported that the mid-season premiere is going to be titled Bouncing Back. And the synopsis says, in the aftermath of his trip to Maveth, Coulson is more determined than ever to get to Gideon Malik and put an end to Hydra once and for all. And then Daisy and the team encounter more Inhumans who have powers like they've never seen before, but will they be friends or enemies of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Could that be any more generic and telling you nothing?
I know. It's kind of just a, okay, we kind of knew that was going to happen anyway, but Michal, who writes for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on the site, did point out to me that the title could be a reference to the character Slingshot, who is a new Inhuman who's been rumored to be joining the cast. So it could be that Bouncing Back is a reference to that character rather than the more optimistic thought of them bouncing back from the horrors of the last part of the season.
Heaven forbid there be any positive moments on this show.
Yeah, everything is horrible and everybody dies. Yeah, so that'll be back. Obviously, once Agent Carter is wrapped up its season, then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will come back to take its place, and we'll probably start getting slightly more information as that happens. But for now, that's it. That's all of our TV headlines. Again, not much. So, yep. Yeah. Well, we can move straight on to what was on TV this week. And I guess let's get Agent Carter out of the way, because this week's episode was kind of weird. It was one of those episodes where nothing really stood out particularly as something that was, like, that we'd be dying to talk about. Not saying it was a bad episode. It was just a little strange, especially considering the episodes prior to this have been so strong in certain parts and it's been really easy to find discussion points for them. But yeah, this one was kind of a little bit all over the place. But how did you feel about this episode just in general?
Honestly, it didn't stick out to me all that much. I was really struggling to remember what actually happened in this episode. I was kind of, I'm always recapping The Flash when it's on. So I'm working on that and watching it at the same time. And I think that half attention made it even harder for me to have any memory of what actually happened in this one. So I feel like it was probably not the strongest outing they've had.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, we kind of got to see Peggy confronting Whitney and the relationship between Whitney and her husband kind of getting a bit strained. And we saw Peggy getting what should, for all intents and purposes, have been a mortal injury, considering she was thrown and landed on, like, a rebar kind of thing that... It was just kind of one of those things where I was like, that's an oddly convenient survival. and then it was patched up by just a little bit of gauze and love and tender care. And Sosa getting very worried. It was just a strange episode all in all.
And yeah, the romance stuff felt very cliched in this one.
Yeah.
Which I did not particularly enjoy. Because they're so good at being original. And I was like, did we really need to go this direction?
No, we really didn't. It just kind of... I think Agent Carter is a series and the characters deserved better than getting pushed into that trope. Because it just felt a little bit like, okay, we need to push the storyline in this direction. What can we do? And they went with the oldest trick in the book, which is like, okay... I know I bring this up a lot, but it is a little fanfic trope that I like a lot. It's kind of that, oh no, X character has been hurt really badly, and now X character has realized that they do still really love them and have loved them all along kind of thing. But sometimes when it plays out in a show, it doesn't work as well if you don't do something a little bit different and original with it. And this one just felt, there was a lot of odd convenience to a lot of this episode. And it felt strange because the rest of the season's been so strong in its episodes. And this one was kind of, I'm not saying it was bad. It was still an enjoyable episode. I didn't dislike it. It was just...
That's saying that Agent Carter is usually firing on like a 9 out of 10 on average, and this was like a 7.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's still above average, but not at the standards the show is usually at.
It's just making me think of that really terrible meme that was the guy who trolls the other guy on Facebook. Was it a 5 out of 7 or a 7 out of 5? Have you seen that?
I have.
It's just making me think of that. Yeah. the other thing is that the Zero Matter stuff is getting a little bit confusing. I'm not entirely sure where they're going with it and what's going on. I mean, did
Okay, so question.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just being particularly dense, but are we supposed to be connecting the Zero Matter with the stuff from the Monolith and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I don't know. This is the thing, is I'm not entirely sure. I mean... It could be. It's very entirely possible that the Monolith stuff is the same, but I don't know that they've made it explicitly clear yet.
Okay, because it looks almost identical to the way it was when it sucked up Simmons, and it reacts in a very similar way by, like, being all violent when it's contained in a thing. So it's like, are we supposed to be saying this is the stuff from the Monolith? Or not. Okay, glad I'm not the only one confused.
Yeah, it's not...
I have made the leap, but I'm not sure if that was...
Their intention?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the same. I know that there was that there was the interview prior to Agent Carter happening where they were like, there are elements of it that are going to link specifically to stuff like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and so on and so forth. And it's kind of like, I'm still not sure where they're going with everything with it. I mean, it's interesting and it's really cool to see Whitney, like, not necessarily struggling with it, but fully embracing the craziness of Zero Matter. But it's just kind of, at the moment, it's just confusing. This episode was just weird all around. I'm waiting for the next episode to see if it kind of makes more things from this one slot into place a bit better, because,
yeah. And you had, like, that weird guy that used to really be into Whitney, and then that they were getting the thugs from, and then, like, beat up that guy. Like, I was like, what are we doing? I was very confused about that part.
Yeah.
Like, I understood they were going to this guy to get the hired thugs to go get the bomb, but I was like, what is the point of him beating on this guy to a bloody pulp? It was a strange sequence.
Yeah, it almost felt a bit like this episode didn't fit in with the rest of the series. And that's odd for Agent Carter to have an episode like that. But I don't really have much more to say about it, which is really stupid, because usually I have so much to say about Agent Carter. So hopefully next week it'll be back on top form.
Indeed. But the DC side was pretty good this week, at least.
Yeah.
So I guess we can start with Supergirl, which, please, it's worth noting that this episode was written to be a potential series finale, because when they wrote it, they didn't know if they were going to get a full season one pickup. So a few of the kind of issues that I had with it kind of iron out when I keep that in mind, which we can get to in a minute. But the main thing we wanted to talk about was the whole Kara's dream, because this episode, for the girl who has everything, is obviously paying homage to the Superman story of Superman being attacked by the Black Mercy and having a dream of having a life on Krypton. But for Kara, it's so interesting because, you know, Superman has no memories of Krypton and his life there because he was a baby when he left. So he's sort of projecting what his life could have been had he been there. Well, Kara had a life there for many years already. You know, she grew up there. She had loved ones. She had familial relationships. So for her, she's reconstructing a life and then kind of projecting a future life from that, which I think is an interesting divergence from the two stories and is really powerful, especially for Kara, as she's been kind of having to deal with, you know, her life and this found family that she's going through, and then the fact that her aunt is her enemy and all this stuff. And it's very powerful, I thought. What about you?
I loved it. I loved that they made that distinct difference. I love that they went with this storyline, and I thought it worked exceptionally well. I was also delighted by baby Kal-El. I don't know why, I just really enjoyed that. But yeah, it was just so interesting to play off the fact that whereas when you usually see these storylines, it offers up a life that they kind of project as a complete dream, a complete fantasy. There's very little to ground them in a genuine reality of what it could be like. And for Kara, it's the opposite. She does have a baseline for what life on Krypton could have been like. And it plays so well on the fact that she kind of knows that it's not real, and yet she struggles with the fact that despite being aware of that, she still wants to stay there, which right off the bat is completely different from how you see these storylines typically play out, because for the most part, usually the people don't realize that it's not real, and then they have to figure that out and come to terms with it and then break out. But they just, like, they flipped it. They subverted this in a really, really cool way. In fact, I think this may be one of my favorite episodes that they've done so far. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I agree. And it was really interesting because it was playing on Kara's memories of her blood family, in her dream versus her found family back that was trying to rescue her. Like, James and Wynn even get brought into the DEO to be with her, which is the first time they've ever been there, which yes. was really powerful. And they're just like, you need to be there when she wakes up. Like, and then Wynn actually made himself useful at the DEO, which was kind of funny.
Yeah.
but I don't know. It was interesting the way that the, you know, the too perfect life in her dream was paralleled with the clearly imperfect, painful life that she has on Earth, but the life that she ends up choosing and going back to this family that in many ways she has chosen for herself, which I think is very powerful. And the scene where Alex is begging her to come back and the world is like starting to blow up around them because she's starting to reject the fantasy. It's just, I genuinely teared up at Alex's emotion in that, the way she's, I need my sister and just, and I can't promise you a life without pain, but you need to come back. I just, oh, that was an incredible scene.
They do that. That relationship is the one I'm most invested in. It's the one that I genuinely want to see all the time. I can't get enough of it. And this episode just, it did so much with everything that they've built up to this point. Like, you can genuinely see how this would have worked as a series finale because the emotional payoff was so huge. It was so good. And yeah, I was very, very impressed with those two as the core relationship again. I mean, we'll keep preaching that till the end of time, but it was just so good. So good. So heartbreaking. Ugh.
And it's so powerful to me that a potential series finale could hinge on just Kara making this choice of, you know, the life that she is going to go back to and that she's going to choose, because she could have chosen to stay in this perfect dream world until the Black Mercy killed her. But she chooses this other life, and it's just so important for her to make the choice. And I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing with Supergirl just in general, is that it's all about choices of family, choices of friends, choices of how to be a hero, when to be a hero, and what to do with your power, the responsibility that you have. All the way along, it's all about Kara's agency and the agency of people around her, and them, even if they don't make the right choice all the time, the fact that they have a choice. And I think it's just, it's so great that they have that there to kind of show that, you know, you're not always going to be in the right at all times. You're not always going to choose the things that are the best. You're not always going to know what is. But either having people around you to help guide you, or even having that informed choice for yourself and being able to do that, that's so important, empowering that choice. And just, I really applaud Supergirl for going in that direction. I really do.
I will say my main complaint with this episode that I alluded to earlier was Astra's death. That it felt very sudden, and it makes more sense when you think of it as being a potential series finale, but I was definitely expecting her to be around a lot longer.
Yeah, same. I definitely was expecting her to be sticking around until the end of the season. I mean, I didn't always necessarily, I know a couple of episodes back, I was wavering on whether or not she'd continue to be the big bad, if there was going to be like a morally gray area that she was going to fall into in respect to Kara, and that Non was going to be the big, big bad, because non-cray. Non-totally cray.
Yeah, my theory was that he was going to lead a coup against Astra at some point.
Yeah, so I was mildly disappointed that Astra died now, because I think there was still a lot more that they could have done with her, especially after paralleling Kara with Bizarro Girl and everything like that. I mean, there was still a lot more to mine there, potentially, but
but they didn't know that when they wrote this.
No, they did not. So they did not know that they were going to be going beyond this episode. So in terms of an emotional punch that this would have packed as a series finale, like that, if it had ended here, this would have been a pretty strong episode to bow out on.
Yeah, it gives some closure to that arc in that, you know, Kara telling her you were there in my perfect world and you were just my family.
Yeah.
So my critique of it kind of lessens when I think about it as a potential series finale, but looking at it just as an episode in a season of 20 episodes is when I go, that seems really weird.
Yeah.
But for all I know, she's going to somehow come back. Or there's going to be, like, a triplet or something.
I don't know. Comic book logic. No one's
exactly
dead.
I mean, we saw her body lying there with Non, but who knows?
Yeah. People come back all the time.
Exactly. So, we'll see. But overall, really good episode, I thought.
Maybe Kara will do the Superman thing where she, like, flies around the world and turns back time. Hey, if it's good enough for Barry Allen, it's good enough for Kara.
Speaking of Barry Allen, shall we talk about The Flash?
Let's.
Which was a delightful episode.
It was incredibly delightful. Oh my god. I think this might have been the most ridiculously enjoyable episode of The Flash that they've done. I think one, I saw a tweet going around of someone saying that this was the best episode that they think they've worked on, and they were, like, incredibly proud of it. But I can't remember who tweeted that out, but I remember seeing someone involved in the show tweeting that.
Yeah, so obviously the concept of this episode, it was titled Welcome to Earth 2. So it was Harry and Barry, Harry and Barry and Cisco, that sounds like a musical act or something.
Yeah.
They head to Earth 2, and Cisco and Barry are, like, mugging and taking pictures, which is hilarious. And we meet the doppelgangers of a lot of familiar faces, including, I think my favorite was just the fact they brought in Floyd Lawton for this episode. Like, totally unexpected, because he's never been on The Flash. He's just been on Arrow, and they killed him off because of the Suicide Squad movie. And then all of a sudden, here he is in this other world on The Flash, and his Deadshot is a nickname making fun of how bad a shot he is.
I know.
That was my favorite.
I was so happy to see him, though, even though he was, like, the worst shot ever. I was just so pleased to see him, because I kind of, like, missed him on Arrow, because I kind of really enjoyed his character. I was very disappointed when they killed him off, and the fact that he just showed up, and I was like, oh my god, this is excellent. I've missed him so much.
And Barry knew exactly who he was, so clearly he's been, like, talking to Oliver or something.
Oh my god.
But it was so unexpected. Like, I was expecting to meet the doppelgangers of a lot of characters, but I never would have come up with the potential for him to be there. So that was just such a pleasant, delightful surprise. That's just going to be the word. This was delightful.
Yeah.
Just a small cameo. Captain Singh was a criminal in Earth 2. Which was humorous. There wasn't really much else to say there. But the first one they run into was Henry Hewitt, which was funny, because both Cisco and Barry are making these horrified faces, like, oh my god, because he was the one who tried to kill Stein and Jax and everyone in the Firestorm episode earlier this season, and they were horrified, and Wells is like, they're fine, what is wrong with you? And they're like, he's a bad guy on Earth 1!
It's so, just the whole, like, the reactions to the characters that they're like, but this person does this on our Earth, and it's like, yes, but not here.
But this is another Earth.
Like, what are you not grasping about this concept?
But, we met Barry's counterpart, who is actually quite similar to Barry himself, though he looks like he's been shopping in Blaine Anderson's closet.
Now I'm just thinking, no, we're not going on a Glee. We're not having a Glee moment. We're not.
I'm just saying, bow tie.
Yeah.
And so he's got glasses and the bow tie, and he's still a CSI, but he is a huge, like, even more of a nerd than our Barry is, which is hilarious. Mm-hmm. And Barry's trying to take his Earth 2 counterpart's place, but Earth 2 is not an Earth worth living on because Barry and Joe are not on good terms on this Earth.
No, they are not.
They can't stand each other. But Earth 2 Joe is a singer. Which was the best because they got Jesse L. Martin to sing.
We finally have a kind of musical episode. We've used someone's musical abilities, which is, yeah.
So I was glad they took that opportunity to at least let one of their singing actors sing. So that was adorable. And then the sad part was, of course, that they killed Joe off. But that, there you go, Donnie. You were worried about Robbie Amell saying he got to kill a series regular and he killed the Earth 2 counterpart of Joe.
Yeah. I don't know. I was really upset about it as well. I was like, I know you're not our Joe, but you're still Joe and this still sucks.
I was just really upset about the prospect of there being a world that Barry and Joe aren't close. That just breaks my heart.
I know.
And that Joe thinks Barry's very selfish, which, aw, that's so the opposite of our Barry.
Yeah, it is. And I don't like to think of Barry being selfish, and I don't like them not being on good terms because they're a family.
It's interesting to think about, though, because both of Barry's parents are alive on this Earth, and Barry even gets the moment to talk to his mother. So I wonder how much the fact that he was raised by both of his parents leads to this very different attitude.
Yeah. Oh, Barry.
Other Earth 2 counterpart, Iris, is our Detective West, and she had the most amazing wardrobe.
Yes. Oh, my God, where do I get everything that she was wearing? Because on point. I wanna dress like Iris so badly.
So good. But yeah, which it makes sense that she became a cop because we know Earth 1 Iris wanted to be a cop, but Joe wouldn't let her. So this one didn't really have as much issue with Joe because he wasn't a cop. So she kind of went through it on her own and became Detective West, and she and Barry are married.
Yeah, they are.
Which Barry was really working with. He was really struggling. He was like a mixture of delighted and like horrified. Like, this is amazing, and also, oh dear God, what do I do?
How do I brain? What's going on?
Why are you taking your shirt off? It's like, because you're my husband and we're in our house, what is your problem? So, Iris was fantastic. And then, of course, we had Caitlin as Killer Frost. And I saw somewhere that Daniel Panabaker said that some of the people on set didn't even recognize her when she was in her Killer Frost costume.
I mean, I can believe it. If you kind of saw that in real life and you were used to her walking around, like, just in a civilian type of look, you would kind of, like, assume it wasn't her. I mean, it's a very different look.
Yeah. And her partner in crime, literally, they brought back Robbie Amell, and he was playing Deathstorm. So those two got a short reprieve until Ronnie gets killed again.
Yeah, it's like
in the episode.
Ronnie can't catch a break in any universe. Poor dead Ronnie.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought Danielle Panabaker knocked it out of the park as Killer Frost.
You could tell she was having a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
Of playing someone who was so unlike Earth 1 Caitlin. She was just having an absolute blast. And that kind of sold it even more, because she was just thoroughly enjoying it. It was great.
Yeah, and her costume was also on point, so loved it. If The Flash does one thing well, it's costuming.
Yeah.
And then, surprise of the episode was our Cisco counterpart, who goes by the name Reverb, which, aside, is I think his brother's name in the comics, like the name his brother goes by. So a little shout out to that. But we got to see evil Sisko. And he had the guy liner.
I know. I feel so bad, but I found evil Sisko the most non-threatening bad guy ever. I was just like, oh, honey, I kind of just want to hug you because, oh no, no, this is just, it's not working out for you. This whole, this whole thing is just, you're not selling it well, but.
I thought Earth 1 Sisko had the line of the episode when Earth 2 Sisko is trying to be like, we could be gods. And he's like, are you Cloud City Vadering me right now?
I'm absolutely delighted by, like, Star Wars jokes. So that got, yeah, line of the episode, definitely. You Cloud City Vader.
So that was great. But this poor Sisko, well, first of all, he has more of a grasp on his powers than our Sisko does. So he's sort of giving Sisko something to shoot for when he gets back to Earth One, which will be interesting. Like, he shot a wave out of his hand and Sisko was like, I can do that? What? So he has something to kind of work toward, but it seems Sisko is fated in every world to have a speedster stick a vibrating hand through his chest.
Yeah.
That was a familiar sight.
Yeah, that's going to trudge up some trauma for, for poor Sisko. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Also worth pointing out that we saw Kara.
We did. So nice little nod to the fact that we're going to be jumping across to Kara's world at some point. Yes, so
that pretty much just confirms how the crossover is going to work.
Yes.
Which they are filming and have posted some delightful pictures of Grant on set at Supergirl. And
yes.
One with him and Melissa Benoist. And
yeah, the one of him with Melissa, I was just like, oh my god, it's happening. Oh my god. Oh my god.
It's happening.
Yeah. It's like, everybody calm down. It's okay. It's happening. Oh, it's so great though, because I'm just so looking forward to them working together, because it's going to be ridiculous. It's going to be so great, but ridiculous. You know, the other thing I really liked from this episode though, the other little nods that we got to other characters within the DC universe. The names on the phone.
Yes. Had Hal and Bruce and Diana.
Ah!
And Eddie was still alive.
Oh my god. I kind of saw those and I was like, oh my god. Is the Justice League kind of...
Barry has Batman, Wonder Woman, and Green Lantern on speed dial. And we know that Jay is best friends with Aquaman, so...
Yeah. So, basically, this universe has, like... everyone that I would want to kind of see. But yeah, I kind of was absolutely delighted by that little nod on the phone. I was like, oh my god, that's great. And it's their first names as well. It was just such a great, it was so many like little Easter eggs. It was this big Easter egg hunt through this entire episode and I absolutely adored it. It was just... Yeah, I think we're just stuck on the word delightful here. Yeah. We're just going to keep
because
using it.
Because it was.
Yeah.
Except Zoom, who is forever terrifying. Like,
yeah.
He is terrifying. Like, the way his mouth moves.
Mm.
And the, like, it's, some of the fabric is still connected, but his mouth still moves. Just, it is terrifying.
Yeah.
They really have knocked it out of the park with that character, with that villain.
Yeah, they really have. They've worked so hard with making him scary and memorable scary as well.
Yeah.
Like, I watched the Flash episode quite late in the evening before going to bed. May have not, like, close my eyes and then all you see is that face and you're like, I don't want to sleep. I never want to sleep again.
Yeah, they have really killed it. And then at the end of the episode, he kidnaps Barry and now Barry is in his cage. With Jesse, it's like, I'm here to rescue you, except I need to rescue myself first.
Yeah.
So, the next episode will be Escape from Earth 2. So this was a two-parter, which Legends of Tomorrow also was, but we'll get there in a bit. But first we can move on to Arrow, when pretty much all we have to say is that terrible fathers are terrible.
Yeah.
Malcolm Merlyn is the worst, and everything I tweeted about that episode is just, Malcolm is the worst, why aren't we killing Malcolm? Why is Malcolm still alive? Dumb, 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 kill Malcolm! God damn it, Malcolm!
Which is basically Caitlin's suggestion for a discussion point here, and I was like, well, there was another terrible father that we could talk about as well.
Yes, but compared to Malcolm, he is, I feel like,
a saint.
The variety breed of awful, and then there's Malcolm.
Yeah.
But the kind of theme that I wrote my recap around for this episode was that these two fathers choose power over their children in this episode.
Yeah. That's a pretty accurate statement to be making. And but the other thing I really like, though, in this episode was the, for all Mama Smoke can be a little bit, like, airy and floaty and kind of, sometimes you can brush her off as not being particularly serious and kind of a lighthearted character, but she really cut straight to the point with Felicity in a particularly, like, hardline way of, like, don't get sucked into his games, pretty much. Like, it's not, just don't let yourself go down that path. It's not worth it. And it was like, wow, Mama Smoke.
Yeah. I really like how much she has been in this season. Like,
yeah, I really...
She's just kind of, seems like she's moved to Star City or something, because she is just always popping in, and I think that's really enjoyable because it just feels like it makes the world a little bigger that Felicity can just call her mom, and which I guess makes sense that she would be staying for a while since Felicity got hurt, but I'm just liking seeing her a lot, because before it was like, oh, they're bringing Mama Smoke back for an episode, and now we're like, oh, she just kind of pops up, which I like.
Yeah, I like it too. It kind of grounds the show back down again, as well as having little bits more of genuine blood family around, who, and blood family that isn't completely terrible and horrible.
Like, which is most of the blood family on this show. Let's
exactly.
Be real.
So it's almost like this breath of fresh air to just have that running parallel as being, you know, a pretty strong and positive relationship and influence on Felicity's life. And especially running opposite how Felicity interacts with her dad in this episode, who is terrible. So, yeah, I'm always happy to see Mama Smoke around. Like, for all that she blusters around and can be seen as not so serious, you know, she can be when she needs to.
And we've seen more of that, like, the episode where they were talking about how Felicity wanted to go to space camp, and her mom finally is like, this is why you couldn't go to space camp, which they reference again. So we have definitely seen a lot more of that character, and I really like that she and Felicity have buried the hatchet and have gotten significantly closer, too.
Yeah, me too.
But, yeah, so the calculator, Papa Smoke comes in. He knows that Felicity is Overwatch, so maybe you need to upgrade your security again, Felicity. And he tries to convince her that he is there just to be in her life, and so she sets a trap for him, and he fails with flying colors, and so she tips off the cops, and he gets arrested. And I was like, you go, Felicity. Like, that scene where he gets arrested is so good, where she's kind of talking about how, you know, I always wondered what it was about me that made you leave. And that was really hard to hear, but it makes sense that she would feel that way, because you get the impression that they were close once, since Felicity got so much of her computer knowledge from him.
Yeah, and I like that she kind of listened to her mother, and she didn't let herself completely get taken in by him and let her emotions rule her head. And she kind of protected herself as much as she possibly could there. And it was really smart of her. And I was kind of, I was incredibly impressed with her basically being like, yeah, no, toxic influences on my life are not happening, especially right now. Like, you get 1 inch of benefit of the doubt, and if you take that inch away, then I'm sorry. Prison for you. Do not pass go. Do not collect 200. I was going to say £200, but it would be $200 for you guys. So
yeah. So Papa Smoke fail, but obviously we'll be seeing more of him down the line. He'll probably escape from prison or something. And
yeah, I mean, security's kind of lax. Everyone kind of escapes from prison.
But he may be on the back burner for a little while, but he will definitely be coming back. But the real horrible father of ever award goes to Malcolm Merlyn, who we have long hated and now just have even more reason to hate because the worst.
This whole episode, I was kind of like, but he's killed so many people. Why are we letting him get away with so much? Why are we kind of getting to the point where we're like, yeah, okay, but he's important to Thea and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yeah, but he killed his other child and
is he really that important to Thea? She doesn't even like him.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just, Malcolm.
The best thing he could have done for Thea's affection is die for her. Like, literally, she does not like him. Whenever he shows up, she is like, get away from me. And so the only way I feel like he could ever have any affection from her is like by dying for her sake, because she hates him.
Yeah.
After everything. And like, he drugged her and made her kill a friend. Like, what?
Yeah. It's just all really horrible and frustrating, and I was almost shouting at my computer this whole episode of, what are you waiting for? What are you stalling for? Just do
Oliver
it.
Oliver is literally the only one who doesn't want Malcolm dead in this episode.
Yeah.
Like, Laurel tells him to kill Malcolm. Diggle tells him to kill Malcolm. Even Felicity, when Oliver like takes Nissa's place, like he looks back at her and she like nods at him like, yes, kill him. Like, and Nissa is obviously wants Malcolm dead. So like, literally the only person in this episode who doesn't want Malcolm dead besides Malcolm himself is Oliver, which makes no sense because he killed people you care about and was involved in the corruption of your parents, and he helped sink the Queen's Gambit, and he blew up the Glades, and like
killed his own son.
Yes. And everyone kept repeating in this episode all the awful things that he did. I'm like, so why are we leaving him alive? He is not welcome on the show anymore. Like, his welcome is long overstayed. And he keeps being like, well, I have to keep the League's power because Nissa can't have it, right? Because Malcolm is so responsible that he should be controlling a worldwide League of Assassins and Spies. Like, no. So he is clear. I think he probably believes himself that he was doing it for the greater good. Like, I think he probably believes his own lies.
Yeah, I mean, that's
literally chose power over Thea's life.
Yeah, but that's kind of like one of those villain tropes that I kind of like when they think that they're the heroes of their own story, because it kind of makes them a more believable villain if you go with that angle. Because it's kind of like, if they genuinely believe in everything they're doing, you're going to hate them because they just think that they're right all the time, because they're the hero. And I think that's what makes it so easy to despise Malcolm.
Yeah. And then at the end of the episode, he brings information of Oliver's son to Damien Dark, because apparently the worst can get even more awful.
Yeah.
He found a way to get more awful.
Yeah, and you know that this is essentially going to just be, it's like playing Jenga, and someone has decided to pull out the stupidest block, and everything's gonna kind of come falling down. And you know that Felicity Cassidy's going to find out. You know that Damien Dark is going to use this against him. Everything's horrible. Everything's very, very horrible right now, because I get the feeling that potentially the reason that Felicity may not be wearing the ring in the flash forward is because the truth comes out, and it's less that Oliver has a son and more that he concealed it and has been lying by omission, that potentially is why she's no longer wearing her ring when we flash forward. And this kind of confirms my vague suspicions that I had that something personal was going to happen outside of whatever happens with the big death that's coming up. But yeah.
I want to give Felicity enough credit that if Oliver explained the circumstances around why he was lying about it, because his baby mama was like, you can't tell anybody or you can't have a relationship with him. Like, I feel like she would be understanding. I'd like to give her that much credit.
Yes, but would Oliver explain that?
That's true. Because yeah. I feel like if he just straight up says, I'm sorry I didn't tell you about this, I have wanted to tell you about this, but a potential relationship with my child was at stake, and I hoped that if I proved myself trustworthy, she would let me tell you eventually.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to put that at risk, and I feel like she would understand, but Oliver is often not the most bright.
And also not the best at communication.
Yes.
I think there's like a communication problem with everyone across the whole DC universe. If people just started talking to each other in a genuine way, then maybe things wouldn't be so horrible all the time.
But then we wouldn't have drama.
Yeah.
But yeah, drama. So basically Malcolm is awful. And Nyssa disbands the League of Assassins, and I think she should just go to Legends now and hang out with Sarah, since she doesn't have a worldwide ring of spies to control anymore.
That would be excellent. I would be very into that and getting more Nyssa. I think that would be excellent.
Yes. So that was Arrow. Just Malcolm is the worst. Passed on. But a character we love is on Legends of Tomorrow. One, Leonard Snart, who Danya has a lot of feelings about. And I just want to say before I just let Danya go, I think the way that they have handled his character arc since kind of starting it at season 2 of The Flash, and even towards the end of season 1, has been one of the best things that the Arrowverse has done. They really have made it subtle that, you know, he has this sense of honor. You know, he keeps Barry's identity a secret even from his sister because he made a promise. And then he, you know, we see how much he cares about his sister. And we see that, you know, he murders his father because he hurt Lisa. So we see how much he cares about her. And then we get the whole thing with him kind of having this sense of owing Barry for helping his family, and the whole, you're a better person than you think you are, with Barry telling him. And then in this episode, he very much, we see these kind of heroic instincts in him. Like, and this is also coming after after Carter dies, is like, you know, I didn't know him, but he became one of my crew, so I want to avenge him. And then in this episode, you know, he has these heroic tendencies, like, shoot me so Ray can keep the power thing down so Stein can get the core and all of this. And he really struggles with leaving Mick to get captured. So I'm really fascinated and appreciative of how they have constructed this character arc. And I think it is definitely one of the best things they've done. Go.
I completely 100% agree. Marima and I joked a lot in the early days of Hero Hype about Legends of Tomorrow essentially being Captain Cold and Friends. I didn't honestly see that as a prediction for it actually turning out to be how invested I would be in Leonard Snart, and it genuinely turning into Captain Cold and Friends for me. Like, I didn't think going in that the character that I would end up falling so deeply in love with above, far and beyond everyone else on this show would be Leonard Snart. And yet, here I am, and earlier today, Caitlin was in Deadpool, watching Deadpool, and I sat down to watch Legends of Tomorrow, and essentially every single message that I sent to her while she was in the cinema was me basically flailing about everything Leonard did in this episode.
And then I come out of the movie and it was like Facebook Messenger, you have like 15 unread messages. It's like, Donnie, I was at the movie.
Yeah. And it was just everything from him realizing that the way in with the person that they needed to when violence was off the table was to work with her interests rather than like her personal interests rather than her work interests and going in that way. And just, he's smooth. Holy crap. I was just like, if I hadn't been sitting down, I would have probably got weak in the knees myself. I was a bit like, oh my god, you're incredibly smooth and this is working on me, and it's like, I'm not even this crazy Russian scientist.
That he was stealing people's wallets.
I know!
like, who says we can't multitask?
Yeah. And Ray's just like, oh, is it too much to... Well, at least you didn't steal the wallet this time. And he's like, And the stuff think...
Oh, go ahead.
The freaking Top Gun joke that he got, that Ray was making a Top Gun joke. And he was like, He's such a little nerd.
I'm really excited about the possibilities of a Ray and Snart friendship. Yeah. Like, we saw the beginnings of it and the way, like... they were interacting, especially in that control room, and like kind of bantering about being a Cub Scout and all that. And
yeah.
He was like, you know, turn it off. No matter what happens to me, promise me, Raymond. Like, and then like telling Ray to keep the force field thing turned down. He's like, don't you dare turn it back on. She's going to shoot me anyway. Like, I really think that could be a very intriguing friendship for both of them. Like, him making Ray loosen up a little bit and Ray's kind of just earnestness and goodness rubbing off a bit on Leonard. Like, I really love the potential there.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Just everything he did in this episode was just so fantastic. And when he started, like, calling Rip out, being like, where was the rest of the team? We keep saying, we're a team, we're supposed to all work together. Where the hell was my backup? Why was I trying to, like, do all of this on my own? And I was just kind of like, why is he the only voice of reason sometimes on this show? But he was just, it was just everything to me, him in the set. Oh my god, the promo for the next episode, though, with him in that, like, Russian military-looking uniform. I was like, no, don't do this to me. I might melt.
So like, what I'm really excited about is that, obviously, next episode's going to feature a prison break because they have members of the team locked away. And Mark Guggenheim said that while they were writing this episode, he said to the writers, like, if we don't come up with a good line for either Wentworth or Dominic to say about this, we are fired.
reference
to Prison Break is, because I thought they had a slight little reference to Brandon Routh being on Chuck in this episode when he was like, I've always wanted to be a spy. So I'm very excited to see what they are going to do with a Prison Break line. That makes me laugh.
Oh, it's just, I'm so looking forward to the second part of this, mostly because in the promo, it just looks like Martin Stein is having a really terrible time and it's what he deserves.
Like, if Leonard Snart's arc has been amazing, like, Stein's arc has gone completely the opposite way.
Yeah. My flailing went twofold. Me going, oh my god, Leonard is the best, to literally screaming about Martin Stein being horrible. Because that, him shouting at Jax, kind of, I was furious. I was just kind of like, don't you white-splain your old man ways to this poor kid that you drugged, kidnapped, and took away from his life, and took every option away from him, and all choices, and have forced him into having to accept it, because you're selfish. And I was so mad. So mad.
And it was the trait, like, he has continued to have all those traits that he saw in his younger self that drove him nuts, and he has clearly not learned from that.
No, not even a little bit. And the thing is that, okay, he got very vulnerable and everything with Rey, and explained exactly why he is acting the way that he is to Jax. And okay, that is a legitimate concern and reason to be the way that he is. However, it is clearly not working. It is dishonest, and he's continuing to be awful. And if he just showed that vulnerability and that honesty to Jax, and they actually sat down and both talked through their genuine feelings, and let's be real, Jax is actually trying to do that. He's basically like, you've made me abandon my mother, who is a widow, who is left alone, who has no idea where I am or what's going on, and she thinks, she's probably gonna think, I am gone, I have run away. Like, this is what you have done to my life. I had a life. I had a family. I had things back on Earth in 2016. And because it's not what you wanted, I've, like, lost my entire life. Like, it's selfish. And it's kind of, he's been nothing but honest with Martin. And all Stein is doing in return is being a dick.
And I think it makes complete sense for him, for Stein, to be worried about Jax because, and feeling guilty about Ronnie, because not only it's survivor's guilt for Ronnie dying and him not, but, and then thinking about the life that Ronnie had in front of him, like, everyone thought Ronnie was dead, and then he comes back and he gets married to this woman that he loves, and Stein, like, officiated this wedding. Yeah. So he's like, he has obviously an incredible sense of guilt for everything that is lost by Ronnie dying, but he is not expressing it well. So yeah, so positives on one side, we got Leonard Snart, and not so positive, we got Martin Stein. And also, I would say also on the positive side is you got the ladies together, which I quite enjoyed. You've got Sarah helping Kendra embrace her inner warrior, and you've got Kendra helping Sarah try to embrace her inner human side. And I am always here for letting ladies support each other.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting team up that I'm looking forward to seeing play out a little
bit. One thing I really like about what the show is doing so far, 4 episodes in, every episode has had a different combination of people.
Yeah.
And that really works, I think.
I think so, too. I think it's been really, really good. So, yeah, that's kind of it for all of the TV stuff.
As if that wasn't enough.
Yeah, we had a mixed bag of episodes this week, from the weird and bizarre to the completely delightful.
So, that's our word, delightful.
Delightful. Right, movies. So, slightly more movie news than TV news this week, thanks to, you know, that game played with balls. So we got a new Captain America Civil War trailer. Now, there wasn't a whole lot new in this trailer. There was enough. It played on a lot of the same themes as the first big trailer that we got for Captain America Civil War. However, there were some small new glimpses that we got in here. So one of the ones that we got was that Iron Man has some new tech, which is essentially what looks like a watch that turns into a kind of gauntlet that covers his hand and part of his wrist, which was kind of neat. I was like, wow, okay, it's like an Apple Watch, but more hardcore.
And it's a good thing he has it, because Bucky would have shot him in the head, apparently.
Now, I kind of was looking at where he was aiming the gun initially, because I have watched this trailer obsessively, and I don't think he was aiming at Tony. I think he was aiming at someone slightly behind Tony, and Tony's grabbed the gun. So I guess we'll see how it plays out in the actual movie, but that's my working theory for it, is that he wasn't necessarily gunning for Tony Stark himself. It's someone behind him. But we got some really good little Bucky bits in here. We saw him as the Winter Soldier in his, like, traditional dress, like, up on the mountains. We also got to see him with the cryostasis chamber. Now, the cryostasis chamber in that shot looks very, very similar to one from the comic books, specifically from around the time that the Winter Soldier was decommissioned, when the guy who was running the whole project kind of he died, and they decided to just shut down the whole Winter Soldier program. And he was basically decommissioned, which means he was put into cold storage for a few years before someone woke him back up again. Like, they found him, took him away, woke him back up again, and reprogrammed him, essentially. But he was basically put into stasis and shut down. And it looks incredibly similar to that. So I'm thinking we might be getting some flashbacks to his time as the Winter Soldier and in the original program for him being basically brainwashed. Did you get any, like, interesting glimpses of things from this trailer that that kind of caught your eye?
I mean, I particularly love the shot of Bucky standing over Steve.
Yes.
With the gun and the shield. Oh, that looked so good.
That really, really did. I loved that. I loved that shot. There were some nice little bits in this. We also got to see the two teams facing off for the first time, like the actual, like, pen of each lineup properly in the airport, which was kind of cool. But again, and none for Spider-Man, bye. Like, we still haven't seen Spider-Man, which makes me wonder if he's actually going to show up in the film proper, or if he's going to be an after-credits scene of some kind, or
they're just trying to keep it under wraps.
Or they're keeping it
to look forward to.
There's that, but they could have taken him out of those lineup shots so that you don't know which side he's on at that particular point. So there's a lot of things that they could be doing with it. They could CGI him in, let's be real, into that part in the movie. So yeah, I just still think it's a little strange that we haven't even seen, like, a vague glimpse of him yet. But for all the hype that they've given, the fact that he is actually going to be in this movie,
it reminds me a little of all the Star Wars marketing in a very specific somebody never appeared.
That is true. That is very, very true. Hashtag where's Spider-Man.
I'm gonna have, like, a Twitter account that's like very lonely Spider-Man.
I mean, with the rest of the Super Bowl stuff, what we got was, like, another little Deadpool clip and some other stuff. The one trailer that did not decide to show up, even late with the Starbucks, was Batman v Superman. They did not show their trailer during the Super Bowl.
No, but we have seen it, and it's airing in front of Deadpool as well. So if you go see Deadpool, you will see this trailer. It has some new footage. We get a little bit more interaction with Alfred and Bruce. And for as much of this movie as I'm wary about, I really do have warmed up to Ben Affleck as Bruce.
Batfleck!
Yes, I have warmed up to this.
The initial little bit, the start of this trailer, this final Batman v Superman trailer, reminded me a lot, and I don't know if you've played the games or not, but it reminded me a lot of the Arkham Asylum kind of series of games, and the Arkham Knight, and those games. It reminded me so much of one of the, like, action sequences from that. I actually had to stop for a second and try and figure out if I was watching a cutscene from one of those games, or if I was actually watching the opening to a Batman v Superman trailer. It kind of threw me for a loop a little bit. But there was some definite ridiculousness in this trailer, like Superman climbing fully clothed into a bathtub with Lois Lane.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And the Wonder Woman jumping and going, ah! I was like, wait, what the hell is that?
I did like what she said to Bruce, you've never met a woman like me. And then you get the shot of Wonder Woman, like, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty great. But I don't know, it's kind of borderline. This film, I'm not sure if it's trying to go for this, like, really serious vibe, and it's not quite hitting it for me. It's just kind of being, it's just a little cheesy and funny, and I don't know if that's gonna actually work for me, because I actually kind of enjoyed this trailer. A little bit. So I think maybe this shooting for Sirius and missing by a long shot is actually going to make me enjoy this movie more.
Well, even inadvertent humor would be better than the lack thereof in Man of Steel.
That's true, but I don't know. There was just something about the vibe of this trailer that I was like, okay, I'm kind of vaguely digging this in a weird way. But yeah, I guess we're really not that far out from the film coming out.
No, so. It comes out next month.
I know.
I still cannot wrap my head around Jesse Eisenberg. I just, no matter how many times I see him, he's like Jared Leto's Joker. Like, I just, no matter how many times I see it, I'm like, I can't do it. I can't.
Yeah.
That stupid island wig that he's wearing, the Oliver's Island wig.
Oh my God.
I can't handle it.
No. I don't know whose wig is worse. Lex Luthor's in this one, or Sue Storm in Fantastic. Which is my, I saw someone referencing Fantastic Four as Fanfastic because they did that weird stylization with the four in the middle, and now I can't stop calling it that when I'm referencing it. It's the best thing. So who, if it was someone in the comments somewhere of like one of the Hyperbole articles and you're listening to this podcast, thank you, because that is the funniest thing that I've seen in a long time and I keep using it now, so thank you very much for that. My kind of responded to this when we tweeted it out today, though, the trailer, the Batman v Superman trailer, asking us, does this one have colours?
Not really.
No, they just need to turn that saturation up slightly. But yeah, it's still very muted, which is a shame, because the one thing that I really love about Superman and Wonder Woman's costumes is that they're really colourful and awesome. But hey, so Deadpool. Obviously, we've both gone to see the film. You will get our thoughts on it. We're going to do a special at some point once we figure out our schedules. But a little bit of news for you about that. Deadpool 2 is already being written. So they are working on a script for a sequel. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean we're actually going to get it, but they are definitely working on a second. This is the news that makes me think that it's probably going to happen. Deadpool actually broke the box office record for R-rated Thursday night openings with $12.7 million as its opening night, which for an R-rated movie is pretty unprecedented. That's really good money, and that's just domestic. That's not worldwide opening. So for a film that probably cost, I think they said about $58 million to make, which for a superhero, well, he's not a superhero, for a super not hero movie.
super anti-hero.
A super anti-hero movie. That's not a lot of money to make it. That is practically an indie film by those standards. And it's probably going to make that all back in its first week. And also taking into account the marketing, if we call it a ballpark figure of about $80 million with all the marketing that they did involved, then it's probably going to make its money back and then some more. And that's not including all of the ridiculous Deadpool merchandise that is going to be selling like hotcakes because of this. So yeah, okay, the script being written for Deadpool isn't necessarily an indicator that it's absolutely happening. This opening night projection of how much money it made, that is going to inform it a lot more.
This doesn't surprise me. I saw it today. We're recording on Friday, and I went to see it at a 1:10 p.m. showing. So, like, it was the first showing of the day, middle of the day on a weekday, and my theater was very full. Like, I usually go see big movies when they come, the Friday they come out in the middle of the day because there are maybe three or four other people in the theater. No, there were a lot of people there.
Yeah, so I saw it yesterday, which was Thursday. A friend of mine came up to see it with me. And, right, not a similar kind of situation. So the cinema that I go to, I live in a city where the cinema that I go to is there's practically never anyone there. I don't know why. It's a big chain. It's an Odeon cinema, if anyone is familiar with the UK cinema chain. So it's not a small cinema chain, but there's usually no one in the screens. The only screen that's been packed out every time I've gone to see a film there has been Star Wars. So I went to see Deadpool yesterday, and it wasn't packed out, but for a 7 o'clock showing on a weekday, it was actually fairly full. And I was quite surprised, because that cinema, it's usually me and maybe two other people in a screen, usually when I see a film there. So, yeah. That probably tells you a lot about the direction this is kind of going in.
And that's impressive for an R-rated movie, because they've limited the pool of who can see... of who can see this movie by rating it R. So R-rated movies usually just don't make as much money, because you can't have as many people go see it. So the fact that it's making this much money already with already a limited audience is very impressive.
Yeah. So watch this space, because it's almost certain that it's going to get a sequel. And we will give you a rundown of all of our thoughts very soon. So watch out for that special edition.
Let's just say watch the after credit scene for something relevant.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Stick around until the end of the credits. But speaking of Deadpool, he's going to be your comic corner for this week. So I've picked out a couple of my favourites just to get you in the mood before you go and see the film, or if you want to pick up something else after seeing it. So, first one I've got for you is Deadpool Classic Volume 1, which this is the perfect place to start if you want to learn more about the Merc with a Mouth. So this trade collects several of Deadpool's earliest appearances, including his debut in New Mutants number 98. It covers everything from his origins and his first miniseries, which finds him battling other mercenaries for the rights to a super weapon that will go to the last mercenary standing. Next one I've got is Deadpool Dead Presidents. Yeah, you heard that right, Dead Presidents. This run kind of finds Deadpool attempting to put the corpses of several dead presidents back in the grave after a necromancer raises them. He's aided by Ben Franklin, who is not a president as much as Deadpool might insist that he is. But essentially, Deadpool prevents the men who founded and shaped the early United States from destroying it with a zombie army. It's wacky, it's weird, and kind of serious in equal measure, which is sort of Deadpool all over, really. Next one I've got is Cable and Deadpool, If Looks Could Kill. So this is the ultimate anti-hero odd couple. Despite starting off on opposite sides of a conflict, this series explores Deadpool and Cable's relationship as they find some common ground to take down a mutual enemy. And hey, they both have a love of guns and action, which is the what the best of relationships are built on, right? The run kind of yo-yos between action, comedy, and serious contemplation, and are you kind of sensing a theme here? As Cable attempts to save the world, and Deadpool, well, he just pushes all of Cable's buttons. Next one I've got is Deadpool, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. So, dysfunctional partnerships and team-ups is where it's at with Deadpool, which is exactly what you get when you match him up with Wolverine and Captain America. So, the trio head to North Korea, where they uncover some shocking details about Deadpool's past. And alongside that, they free a group of test subjects who have been made into knockoff X-Men via Deadpool's DNA. So, talk about making things personal. But Deadpool is his usual smart mouth self, but this series also digs into his troubled past. And last one I've got is Hawkeye vs. Deadpool. So this follows on almost immediately from Matt Fraction's Hawkeye run, and is more of a reluctant team-up than an actual versus story. The plot isn't that heavy. Deadpool kind of joins Hawkeye and Hawkeye to take down Black Cat, but expect plenty of hilarious bickering, Deadpool's bemusement at Pizza Dog getting his own panels in the comic, and just a hell of a lot of ridiculous fun. And really, did you expect me not to include this one?
Never.
If there's ever a reason to include Hawkeye in something, I'm gonna take it. I'm sorry. Right. feedback. So we got a couple of bits of feedback this week. First thing that we got was in respect to the Flash episode that aired, where Sarah said, Reverb is a way better name than Vibe, in my opinion.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, that is a shout out to his brother, who also has an alter ego in the comics.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't disagree with that. I think Reverb is a better name, but I think they didn't want to... I don't think they wanted to take the easy way out with it and kind of go with that name. But, you know, they're doing what they want to do. So we've got the name Vibe. We're just going to have to get used to it.
Cassie, in response to Arrow and Malcolm's awfulness, says, Malcolm, his son, William, me. Oh, shit! Though that'd be a lame grave reveal, the delivery of the line sent chills. And I don't think William's in the grave, but...
I think this is going to be another red herring, so it's going to be like the Felicity thing, that they're going to set it up for us to think that it's William and then go with one of the other people.
Barry wouldn't go to that funeral. Felicity wouldn't be that upset about that.
Yeah, so they're kind of, they're throwing it out, kind of out there as this red herring to kind of throw us off the scent, I think. But yeah, Malcolm is terrible. We got a hyperbole comment, and this one's kind of long, and I did want to highlight this one because I know that we have very specific thoughts about Wynn in Supergirl, and I kind of just wanted to highlight this because it's a nice alternate opinion to ours, because obviously Caitlin and I both feel very similarly about Wynn. Michael commented on hyperbole and said, apologies for the long reply, but I gotta defend Wynn here because although I agree with what you guys are saying, especially about the non-existent friend zone, I think calling him horrible or awful is going way too far. This is a guy who went through a pretty traumatic childhood, who was betrayed by the person he loved and trusted most, which had an obvious effect on his self-esteem and ability to make friends and girlfriends. Then, one day, he meets a girl who is kind, intelligent, funny, and beautiful, who sees him as the great guy he is. How could he not fall in love with her? Of course, she doesn't feel the same way about him, nor should she have to. However, he can't just stop loving her either. He took the biggest risk of his life by telling her his true feelings and put his heart on the line. That's not the kind of thing you can just easily get over. He can't just automatically go back to being BFFs with her. I think he handled himself pretty well considering how complicated the situation is. The best possible outcome would be for him to meet someone who will make him feel the way Kara makes him feel and love him back. I truly believe he is a good guy with a kind heart, and I want to see him happy. I don't want the writers to take the easy way out and make him a villain. I'm tired of the geek who gets rejected by a girl becomes a villain trope. I can see this angle. I understand this kind of point of view. I agree that I don't like the trope of a geek who gets rejected by a girl becomes a villain thing. I think it's lazy, and I think it's not very powerful motivation for becoming a fully fledged villain. So it's kind of a cop-out in a lot of ways, so I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think that a lot of this might be down to the writing not necessarily showing this aspect of it as strongly as it possibly could, because a lot of what I see with Wynn is, he had a traumatic childhood, but your decisions from that point on are your own. And he's still kind of, he's passing the buck a lot of the time and pushing things onto other people and reacting that way. And that's the thing that bugs me the most, because it's an attitude you get a lot as a girl when you turn down someone's advances. So it could, I will fully admit that could be projection on my part, but I thought this was a really interesting comment to bring up because it's a completely different angle to the way that we look at it. Do you have anything to add, Caitlin?
I would just say that I don't think either of us are looking down on Wynn for falling in love with Kara or being hurt that his feelings have been rejected. It's just that how he has handled himself in the wake of that and his attitude, even in that scene where he and James are sharing a drink and he essentially is like, why aren't you with Kara kind of acting. His attitude to me feels like he treats Kara a little like property at times.
Yeah.
Which bothers me. So I understand that he could fall in love with her, and I understand that it would hurt very much to be rejected, but it's then on him to be a better man in response to that, and I don't feel like he has done that.
Yet. But there is still time for him to kind of get over it.
And yes, and based on the where they would have ended the series had this last episode been the series finale, it didn't look like they wanted to go the villain route with him. Like, he was with them in that happy end scene of her with her little chosen family.
Yeah, so I guess it's just there's still quite a few episodes left to go, so there's a lot still to play out. And we could still see it come back around to a place where we see Wynn getting over it and potentially making strides to correct that behavior, which I do actually hope that they do. Because I think that there is still some potential for Wynn as a character, especially because I was really enjoying the kind of emotional gravity that they were playing on in the episode where we meet his father. Like, I thought that was really interesting, and there was a lot that they could mine there and use and make him a lot more interesting as a character. But I think that a lot of the time they're taking the easy way out with the way that they're writing his reaction, and it's just something that on my part I've dealt with a lot when having to turn people down because I'm not interested, and then you have to deal with slightly passive aggressive behavior, and yeah, that's where it's like rubbing me the wrong way. I don't inherently think that he's a bad person. I just think that it could be handled a lot better than it is. But again, you know, there may be people who are reading this the same way that you are. And again, everyone's going to have a valid reading of this. It can be quite subjective depending on like how you look at a narrative and what your own personal experiences are in your life. So I just thought this was an interesting one to bring up because it offers a very, very different perspective to of Wynn as a character than what we see. Cool. So guys, if you do want to leave us feedback, you can do so. Get in touch with us. Join the conversation. Let us know what you've been thinking of any of the episodes during the week via our Twitter account, which is @HeroHypePodcast. Again, you can email us, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypable. And we, as always, are going to end on our question of the week. So last week we asked you, what position would your sibling nominate you for? And Cassie got back with an answer that kind of broke my heart a little bit, because she said, my brother wouldn't nominate me for anything. We're kind of estranged. It's what happens when you're a decade apart in age. And I was just like, oh, Cassie.
Been there. My siblings are 8 and 10 years older than me, respectively.
I have a baby brother. So there's 4 years between me and my little brother. So, yeah. He probably wouldn't nominate me for anything either. But, Caitlin, would you like to ask this week's question of the week?
Sure. So, ahead of New York Toy Fair, Funko released some of the products that they're... a look at some of the products they're going to be bringing, which included a really adorable Supergirl figure, some stuff from Suicide Squad, some more Civil War stuff, that kind of thing.
Spider-Gwen!
So, our question for you is, what Funko Pop figure would you like to see released next?
For me, anything else with Hawkeye on it. The only Hawkeye thing that they've ever released is an Age of Ultron Hawkeye Funko Pop. That's it. I don't want an Age of Ultron Hawkeye. I'm with everyone on the whole getting outraged about the lack of Black Widow merchandise, but Hawkeye has one Funko Pop and Black Widow now has multiple ones, and I just want one. That's not an Age of Ultron one. I want him to be wearing slightly more purple. In fact, give me one with Pizza Dog. Him and Pizza Dog would be like my ideal Funko Pop figure.
I want a white canary to go with my canary. I'm sure they'll already on my desk.
I'm sure they'll probably do something like that. I get the... I don't know why, but I'd get the feeling that something like White Canary they would probably do as, like, a limited edition alternate one, like an exclusive, like they do in, like, the Walmart stores and Target and all of that.
And I would need it very much. And on a non-hero topic, I need some Avatar The Last Airbender Funkos.
Yes. Well, they've just released Sailor Moon ones, so... It's they're making this shift into more animated show ones. I think they've got, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I think I saw Steven Universe ones at some point as well. So, make it happen, Funko. What are you doing?
I need some Zuko. I'm just saying.
Hello, Zuko here. But guys, let us know, what would your ideal Funko Pop figure be? What would you want to be released next? Let us know. Twitter, email, comment, whatever is best for you. But until next week, guys, I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we'll be back to talk about everything that came out next week. So see you then. Bye.
Bye.